This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone, and welcome to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin.
And this is Jackie.
And today's episode is a case with a lot of twists and turns, and it's one that I recently stumbled across that I could not stop reading about. There are cases out there, like, say, for example, Junko Furuta, that just hits you just incredibly hard, devastating, traumatic. You can't shake it. You can think of nothing else for weeks after. And this case actually did that for me as well.
That's crazy.
I know.
When I heard about it, same, I went down this whole tragic, riveting moment of I can't look away.
And we will speak more about this in a moment, but first, let's go ahead and get some housekeeping out of the way. First, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. You can find us on social media, on Facebook and Twitter at wesawthedevil, and you can find us on Instagram at wesawthedevilpodcast.
It's almost like we forget our name and we have to keep writing it everywhere. So if you forget our name, I'm sorry.
And don't forget that we have a Patreon. So for as little as $3 a month, you can support our show. And we have a variety of benefits and tiers, such as merch, stickers, postcards, true crime goodies. So don't forget to check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. You can also find the sign up on our website, WeSawTheDevil.com. So that was short and sweet this week, guys. Let's get into the case. You may have seen us post about it on social media. We posted a preview on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. This is the case of Amy Lynn Bradley, the 23-year-old woman who went missing while on a cruise with her family. An interesting stat for you. Since the year 2000, 361 people have gone overboard or missing from cruise ships. Now, considering that in 2018 alone, 28.5 million people went on a cruise, that appears to be a truly minuscule number. But what about the cases that aren't so black and white? What about the ones where you're not sure they went overboard? They went missing?
Good question. All of this makes me rethink going on a cruise. I've never been on a cruise, and I'm like, I want to go on a cruise one day.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, second thought, I think I'm good.
There are many websites out there actually dedicated to victims of cruises, whether it's being sexually assaulted by staff or crew, to just bad treatment, people going missing, being left behind. There are a lot of websites out there devoted to that. And we read a lot of accounts and testimonials from people just kind of bolstering and getting a picture. And it doesn't paint a very good picture, that's for sure. But again, in 20 years, only 361 people have gone missing.
Yeah, it's a very low percentage.
This case absolutely terrifies me. Imagine for a moment, your 23-year-old daughter just recently graduated from college and is about to start her first big job. To celebrate her achievement, you and your husband decide to have a family cruise with both of your children. Everything is magical for the first 2 days. Then, on the third night, the unthinkable happens. Your daughter disappears in the middle of the night without a trace. What follows is excruciating. Not only because your daughter is missing, but also because there are verified sightings of her for years after. What would be worse? Believing her to be dead? Or knowing that she is alive and that you can do absolutely nothing to help her. And this is the story of Amy Lynn Bradley. This year, Amy Bradley would have turned 46 years old. Or maybe she did turn 46 years old. No one knows. She disappeared without her shoes, ID, driver's license, or any other personal items, and her family hasn't seen or heard from her in 23 years. Most of us true crime aficionados know the drill, right? There's a reason why there are shows like The First 48 and others. Almost all homicide detectives and experts would tell you that if you can't find a lead within the first 48 hours, the chance of solving that case decreases dramatically. In fact, the chance of solving it cuts almost in half. Why? Because firsthand accounts and memories are the freshest during that time, and it's best to act quickly on those leads. But what if you get leads and they aren't actionable?
We all know that's a red flag when someone goes missing and they don't have their ID. Like what happened with Vanessa Guillen. She went missing, didn't have any of her belongings with her. And right. We all know in our head that something's not right.
Mm-hmm. So who was Amy Bradley? On March 21st, 1998, 23-year-old Amy, having recently graduated from college with a degree in physical education, decided to celebrate her new job at a computer firm by joining her parents, Ron and Iva, and her 21-year-old brother Brad on a cruise to the Caribbean. Her father, Ron, had won a 7-day Caribbean cruise from his employer. Their ship, the Rhapsody of the Seas, a 1,000-foot ship from the Royal Caribbean family of cruises that housed over 3,000 passengers. The family boarded in Puerto Rico and set sail to Aruba, and the family had a great time on their first day. Amy had just dyed her hair from blonde to brown and was excited to party on the ship's nightclubs. And the first day they explored Aruba, Amy ate, drank, spent time with her parents and family, and had a great time. Something was strange, though. The waitstaff and cruise ship employees were just a little too attentive to Amy. Some were just overly flirtatious, and she actually expressed discomfort with their behavior to her parents. In one interview, Amy's mother, Iva, quotes, "When we were on the ship, we noticed immediately that there was a tremendous amount of attention toward Amy from the crew members. There were other crew members that had also had contact with Amy during the cruise, a girl who worked in the casino, and 3 cruise ship waiters who were stationed at our dining table. The waiters were very over-attentive towards Amy from the moment they met her. After dinner one evening, one of the waiters approached us while we were visiting with associates with whom we've been traveling and asked for Amy by name."
That's not weird.
The waiter stated, quote, "they wanted to take Amy to Carlos and Charlie's while docked in Aruba. When Amy and her brother Brad met with us a short time later, we told Amy about the waiter who had asked for her by name. She responded, quote, I wouldn't go and do anything with any of those crew members. When the waiter asked, I thought maybe it was just a little forward of him to be asking those types of questions." Iva, her mom, continued, "There was a dance troupe that was allowed on board the ship. There was a bass player who I noticed, and he was a very unsavory looking character. Amy told her brother Brad that the bass player had been hitting on her. She said he was a real jerk." So it sounds like Amy had already been receiving unwanted attention almost on day one by crew members, wait staff, band members.
So weird.
On the second night, the family got dressed up and went to a fancy dinner. And there's a really nice photo taken of Brad and Amy that night on the rails of the Grand Staircase, taken by the cruise ship photographer. You see, this was a very particularly unique trip in that the professional videographer had been hired by Royal Caribbean to take promotional videos and photos for the cruise line on this voyage. And a great deal of the ship's activities were actually recorded via photographs or video. Keep that in mind for later. On the third night, after having dinner with their parents, Brad and Amy went to the ship's nightclub to dance. And here she met up with Alistair Yellow Douglas, a member of the ship's band Blue Orchid. His name is Alistair Douglas, but he goes by Yellow. This was the, quote, unsavory looking character that her mother was speaking of. Amy's parents went to bed around 1 a.m., and sometime around 5:30 a.m., as the ship was coming up to Curaçao, Amy's dad woke up. Now, he saw her asleep on the balcony outside of her room. He was like, okay, well, I'm just going to take another nap and I'll wake up in another 20 minutes and then we'll, as a family, go to Curaçao to have breakfast. So he went back to sleep. About 25 minutes later, he woke up and Amy was gone. Ron initially thought that Amy had gone back up to the deck knowing that they were going to leave and go get breakfast, but he could not find her and he looked everywhere.
That seems very normal, yeah. Right? I've been on vacation with my family and, you know, people would go and get food and stuff.
And as you're coming up to an island, right, that you're going to dock at, it makes sense that maybe she was getting ready or going to meet them, you know, so they could disembark together.
Yeah, and everyone knows that there's plans coming.
Mm-hmm. Ron went frantically searching for her and he couldn't find her. So after returning to his room, he woke up Amy's mother, Iva, and then the two went to speak to the captain. They begged and pleaded with the captain not to lower the gangplank. They begged for him to make an announcement and take a head count of all of the passengers. The captain refused all of their requests, but did agree to organize a small, quiet search with the ship's security team. He told them that he didn't want to, quote, disturb the passengers.
Oh, okay.
So 12 hours later, at 5 p.m., the Douglases and the captain of the ship reconvened. No one had found her, but the captain assured them that, quote, every nook and cranny had been searched. The captain also insinuated that she could have fallen overboard. Others in the room posited that Amy could have committed suicide.
Oh my God, that's really escalating things.
Yeah, but her family in no way believed that either. Amy had made multiple stops to the ship's gift shops. She bought a lot of gifts for family and friends back home. So it was very unlike her. Amy's family decided to disembark to Curaçao to see if Amy had possibly slipped off of the ship. But that would have been really unlike her. and they had just 4 hours until the ship resumed its voyage and sailed away. They decided to stay in Curaçao. They went to the American embassy, but it was closed. They called the FBI, but it would take at least 24 hours until agents could be dispatched to the small island. So they remained on Curaçao to look for Amy. They remained on Curaçao for 5 days. Nothing. No leads. Finally, the FBI contacted them to let them know that they probably should have boarded the ship and gone back with it. It turns out the captain lied. A thorough search had not been done. Nooks and crannies had not been searched. The only thing the crew did, they searched the common areas and the bathrooms. That's it.
Wow.
So the FBI flies with the Bradleys to the island of St. Thomas, and they get back on the ship from there. On March 26, the FBI did a form of what they call a bomb search on the ship. They searched the whole ship, but again, came up empty-handed. However, once Iva and Ron got back on the ship, 2 girls ran up to them. They had seen Amy the night of the 21st. They said at roughly 5:45 a.m. during the 20-minute time frame before she went missing.
No way.
Mm-hmm. Amy was riding up in an elevator with a Grenadian man by the name of Alistair Yellow Douglas. He was the bass player in the ship's house band. Amy's brother Brad was present for this conversation, and it immediately jogged his memory. He had seen Amy dancing with Alistair that night before at the nightclub. Also, the morning she went missing, during the original search by the cruise ship's security team, Alistair had approached Brad and said, quote, "Sorry to hear about your sister." It was shocking because no one other than the captain and the security team should have known that Amy was even missing at that point.
That's not freaky.
Alistair Douglas was immediately brought to speak with the FBI. He claimed he had no idea what had happened to her, but he did end up changing his stories a couple times. He agreed to take a polygraph test, and he passed it.
Yeah, psychopaths can pass it.
Yep. As he left the interrogation room, Ron Bradley, Amy's dad, was standing right beside the door. Alistair walked right by him, gave him a smile and a thumbs up. The FBI investigation brings up another odd fact. You know how cruise ships will snap random pictures of its guests and then hang them up everywhere so that people can purchase copies if they want to? Kind of like an in the raw type of photo.
Yeah, it's almost like when you go on a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Sometimes at theme parks, they let you get the photo of you being freaked out.
Exactly. A lot of that happened on this one, actually more so than usual because of the videographer on board. Well, there were a lot of pictures of Amy. A lot of them. And guess what?
What?
They were gone.
Are we kidding?
Someone had taken them all down. They were all missing. And Amy was the only passenger who had had any of her photos removed.
Are we kidding?
No.
Okay, yeah, it's not suspicious.
It gets even better. These photos were removed 9 hours before she went missing.
What?
Yeah.
Was there a video of them removing it?
No, they don't know who did it.
What?
This is in 1998, so they didn't have all the security cameras and everything that we do now. They had no idea who removed the pictures or why they removed the pictures. It was right after dinner. She was still with her family about to go to the nightclub. And all of her photos were removed by someone.
No freaking way.
Yeah. On March 28th, the family leaves the ship and travels back home to Virginia. They start going on the national news, going on the circuit. They offer a $200,000 reward for any information leading to her return. On April 21st, Brad and Ron go back down to Curaçao to hand out flyers and look for Amy. The second day that they are there, a taxi driver approaches them with a potential lead. He claims that he had been sitting in the parking area as the ship was docking, you know, waiting to take passengers around the island. Within minutes, he said Amy, looking terrified and disheveled, ran up to his taxi and asked him where she could find a payphone. She ran off. The cab driver said that he was sure it was her because he would never forget her green eyes. He was 100% positive that it was her. He believed that Amy was still on the island. So the Bradleys then get the help of the local police from Curaçao. They search homes, huts, the backs of boats, and abandoned buildings. Nothing. 4 days later, while sitting at a traffic light, Brad hears Amy call him.
What?
He said it was very distinctive and that he was 100% sure it was her. They're sitting at a red light and he hears this voice come from somewhere and he looks and they see a van. So they do a complete U-turn and they're speeding and they follow this van for miles. They track it, they pull it over. They literally pull it over and it's just one man with no passengers. So after that, they decided to return home to Virginia.
Do you think he was just hearing things, maybe? Or are they mistaken?
He says that anything is possible, but he says that he heard it. He heard it bright as day. During their trip home, a body was found in Curaçao. brown hair, roughly Amy's height. After an emotional roller coaster, would they finally have an answer, albeit a devastating one? No. The body belonged to a male. Instead, the Bradleys received a phone call from another person. In May of 1999, David Carmichael, a wealthy Canadian businessman, reached out to the Bradleys. He said, "Look, I do not want any part of the reward, but I saw Amy. I'm 100% positive it was her." David had just watched a missing persons program on the television and realized something horrifying. He had gone on a scuba diving trip to Curaçao. He was sitting on the beach rinsing off his equipment and saw a woman walking down the beach towards him. She had two, quote, rough-looking men tailing behind her, one on each side. As she approached and heard that he spoke English, she attempted to speak to him. The men dragged her away into a cafe. David says that he realized that something was real wrong at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he probably is smart enough to know.
So he followed them. He went into the cafe and followed them. He said that she seemed to be purposely pointing out her tattoos and revealing them to him and kept making eye contact with him. Here's the thing, is that at this point, the family had not publicized or discussed her tattoos.
Oh, that's crazy.
He was able to identify her tattoos, the exact ones that she had, before they were even in the media.
No way.
So he, on his own money, flew to Virginia to speak with the Bradleys in person. But unfortunately, too much time had passed since he saw her. Even though law enforcement once again was dispatched to the island to search for her, they found nothing.
They must not be doing a good job, because I believe that she's probably still there, just based on that. That's crazy.
Now, one of the most reprehensible and heartbreaking aspects of this case is the treatment of Amy's parents by opportunists around them.
Oh, God.
Because as we all know, and this happens all the time, people try to make a freaking dollar anywhere they can, and they will frequently and consistently use heartbreak, fear, sadness in order to do that.
It just brings out the craziest. Always does. Money brings out the craziest.
In the fall of 1999, a man by the name of Frank Jones contacted the Bradleys and said that Colombian gangsters were holding Amy on Curaçao. He claimed that he had been a special ops service member and offered to help go in and extract her. He also claimed that he had witnesses on the ground, and one of whom, he says, was able to identify Amy's tattoos. Now, keep in mind that the tattoos at this point were well known. Everyone knew about Amy's tattoos now. He said that he would end up needing about $210,000 in order to create a team of more or less special forces veterans in order to go in and get her.
Oh my God.
He told the Bradleys to fly to Florida and wait for news of Amy's rescue. They waited in Florida for over a week. They paid the money.
Are we
waited
kidding?
In Florida for over a week. And then finally, one of Jones's associates called them. He told them it was a scam.
Oh my God.
And he only told them because he too had been scammed out of money.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, how sad. What a piece.
Yeah. I cannot imagine how they felt. Simply cannot imagine.
Oh, I would kick the crap out of him.
Mr. Jones had never served in the military, had no leads on Amy, didn't know anything about her, and had stolen $210,000 from Amy's grieving parents.
Is there anything they could have done, you think?
Well, he ended up pleading guilty to mail fraud and got a 5-year prison sentence and was ordered to return all of the money back to them.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, so there is that light at the end of the tunnel, but oh my God, what a piece of shit.
That must have taken forever to get their money back too. That's tragic.
Now, in the year 2000, another tip came in from a U.S. Navy petty officer that had visited a brothel the year before.
Oh boy.
He claims that Amy and another woman were sitting at a nearby table and that she realized that he spoke English. She came up to him and said, "My name is Amy Bradley," and she started begging him to help her. He told her that there was a Navy ship docked nearby and that he would go get help. He claims she said, quote, "You don't understand. I can't just leave. Help me. Please, please help me." He left, but he did not go get help. He actually never said a word about this to anyone. He left and remained silent because he didn't want his superiors to know that he was at a brothel.
My God.
So
what a piece of crap.
No, I fully actually blame a lot of this on him at this point. Again, he was, when he did come forward, way too late. It was over a year later at this point. He was able to describe Amy to a T.
That's crazy.
100% to a T.
That's just pure insanity to me.
Yeah. 5 years later, guys, in 2005, Judy Maurer claims she had a run-in with Amy at a restroom on the island of Barbados. She says that she was in a stall when two men and a woman entered, and the men were screaming and cursing at the woman, telling her that you need to go through with this deal, and overall roughhousing her. Judy waited a few minutes, and then she came out of the stall after it was silent, and she came face to face with the woman, and she was just standing in front of the sink, slumped over. The woman turns to her and says, "My name is Amy Bradley. I'm from Virginia." Before Judy could even say a word, the two men came back in the bathroom and dragged her away. Judy immediately, literally that moment, contacted the FBI with descriptions of the two men and the woman. She did sketches of them, and that's what makes this next thing even more chilling.
Oh no.
Right around the same time as Judy's encounter, Amy's parents received a stunning lead. An anonymous person emailed them a picture of a woman who looked just like Amy.
Oh, crazy.
And this picture had come from a website for a Caribbean escort service. More or less a brothel or sex traffic.
Oh, that's so sad.
The picture is of a woman with a capture of Jazz, like short for Jasmine. She clearly looks distressed. She is not happy. She's laying on her back wearing panties and a tank top. And there are multiple photos and various states of undress, but the woman is not okay. And you can tell this.
You can tell it's Amy too.
Yeah. In multiple interviews, both of Amy's parents know that that is Amy. Sadly, and I have no idea why, the FBI was unable to glean any metadata from the photos. Like when they were taken, where they were taken, any information whatsoever. So again, they finally get these photos. You know, their daughter has been confirmed to be living, and the FBI can do nothing about it.
They can't even get closure to grief properly. No. And this is what's so messed up, is that she obviously was full of potential when she went on that cruise. Mm-hmm. You know, before, she had her whole life ahead of her, a new job, and now she's being sex trafficked. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine how her parents feel, how her brother feels, being so helpless and then taken advantage of?
Over and over by people. After receiving the pictures from the anonymous party, in conjunction with all of the other firsthand accounts that have happened over the last, God, like 20 years, Amy's family purely believes that she was sold into sex slavery.
Oh, so tragic.
And even though there have been thousands of leads throughout the years, none of them have been actionable. Or if they have taken action or gone somewhere, it's gone. You know that brothel that the Navy guy supposedly saw?
Yeah.
When law enforcement did go check it out, that brothel had burned to the ground.
Are we kidding?
Like a while before.
Wow.
So
a little too late, guys.
Right. You know, we're now in the year 2020. The Bradleys have finally taken down their website looking for Amy, but they're still offering that $200,000 reward. The FBI, just 3 years ago, in 2017, put out another plea for information in their case. They are keeping this alive. And the FBI itself is offering $25,000 for more information. And we will be dropping links to all of these websites on our YouTube video and also in the show notes for this episode.
It makes me want to go on a hunt.
I know.
It makes me want to find her. It really does. I, like, worry. I wonder if she's still alive at this point. She's been there for, like, 20 years.
And we're also going to include a picture on our Facebook page and social medias, too, with a picture basically comparing and contrasting the picture of Jazz with the picture of Amy. And it actually does a point-to-point comparison of her eyebrow, her hairline, her cheekbones, her lips, and whatnot. To be honest with you, I don't see how you can see anything but her.
What a rare case.
Even the FBI says that it's likely her.
I mean, sex slavery is more common than we know, right? If you've ever lived in a border state, you would know. I mean, I haven't had any friends who have not been followed home when they've been little girls, or someone, you know, some weirdo in a car trying to, you know, get you in. Sex trafficking, sex slavery, whatever you want to call it, is so common. And this is a very, like, unique case of they've been spotted.
Mm-hmm.
They're alive. Could be alive.
I can't think of anything more horrific as a parent of going out of my way and knowing that my child was likely taken and not being able to do anything about it. And then what? 7 years later, a photo of her looking miserable and busted up surfaces showing that she's likely been sold into sex trafficking. Like, what's worse, knowing that your child died somehow or knowing that she's out there being raped and beaten and abused?
I think that's actually probably worse.
Yeah. I mean, it would be for me, at least speaking just for myself. It's just so heinously sad. So we're going to put up all of the links to the various reporting places, FBI and whatnot, I know a lot of people who travel to Aruba, Barbados, St. Thomas, and all of those islands. It seems like she's been concentrated in the Caribbean islands, if she's still alive.
So Curaçao only barely doesn't even have the population of 200,000 people. Mm-hmm. When she went missing, it was probably a lot less. Mm-hmm. This is a 40-mile island, you guys. 40 miles. 40 miles, and she could still be there.
Mm-hmm. I just don't, for the life of me, understand how it's now 20-some-odd years later, and we're still here.
What happens to older people in sex slavery?
She would have turned 46 this year.
Her whole future's gone. Like mm-hmm. that.
It's heartbreaking. This case hit me just as deeply as Junko Furuta. That is the case of Amy Lynn Bradley. Please share it far and wide in case you have friends or family who takes cruises and goes to any of these islands. Be on the lookout, please. If you would like additional information on this case, another grieving mother of a girl who went missing. I think everyone remembers the Natalie Holloway case.
I do.
In Aruba. Her mother, Beth Holloway, does a show called Vanished, where she actually discusses and meets with other families and does interviews with family impacted. And she interviewed Amy Bradley's family. And it was an incredible interview. So I definitely suggest checking that out. You can also find that on YouTube. But that is a great, heart-wrenching interview. Late night rabbit hole down Reddit and true crime websites. And this one, I don't know how I didn't hear about this sooner. God, it was really rough. It's terrifying.
No, that's worse than short-term torture.
I personally think so.
I mean, it's even worse for the family of the victim, too.
So that is it for this episode, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Again, you can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com, on Facebook and Twitter at WeSawTheDevil, Instagram at WeSawTheDevilPodcast. And if you are enjoying the show and want to support us and become part of the team, you can do so at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil or by going to our website and clicking on support us.
I want to thank everyone who is supporting us. Thank you so much for all your support, and we really deeply appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much also to our new patrons this week. Welcome to the team.
Welcome to the family.
And don't forget to tune in tomorrow. We will be dropping part 2 of our Heaven's Gate series.
Castration Station.
Indeed. I learned things researching Heaven's Gate that I was not previously aware of. It has been a life-altering experience, let me tell you.
There's this weird psychological component to all of it that I find to be extremely fascinating.
It really is. And honestly, sad, too. I think that Heaven's Gate specifically has become the butt of so many jokes. And when you think cult, you're like, oh, crazy UFO dude, you know, with the crazy eyes and the shaved head. It's actually so in-depth and really sad.
I don't know. They're not going to know until you tell them, Robin.
I guess so, too.
Yeah.
Tune in.
Tune in. Until next crime.